A very good morning to you. Mary Fagan here with you this morning on Horizons. On the programme, we prepare for St. Bridget's Day. I chat a little to Adie Roach and to Teddy O'Connor. First up, there were two documentaries on RT recently, and a lot of people are talking about them. The Last Priest in Ireland and The Last Nuns in Ireland. I asked Reverend Anne Marie and Reverend Isabel what they thought of the programmes. They were both sisters with the Catholic Church, and now they are retired priests with the Anglican Church. Reverend Isabel and Reverend Anne Marie, thank you very much for joining us this morning on Horizons.
Good morning. Nice to see you again. I was very sad watching the programme called The Last Priest. I was sad because it described the past. It described this serried ranks of men who became clerics, who dominated the church and put the church entirely out of order. Before God, every single one of us are responsible for the faith. Every single one of us, be we laity, a term I loathe, invented by clergy, not by the people of God. Every one of us are equally responsible for the passing on of our faith, of living our faith. One of the nuns referred to a song by Leonard Cohen called Anthem, where he uses a quote from Remy, a 15th century philosopher. There's a crack in everything, and that's where the light comes in. So if the priesthood as we always knew it, and many of us, including Isabel and myself, have practiced it, if that is coming apart at the seams, that is good news, not sad news. Because the imbalance between the people of God, between clerics and the rest of society, because nuns are not clerics, nuns are just secular people, that's important, that they work equally, all the people of God. Otherwise, when you have clericalism, you have no concept of the lay vocation. You have no concept of the women's vocation, and it results in women losing their way, losing their vocation, losing their contribution to make to society at any level. And where this idea that God is only willing to ordain men, where that came from, it wasn't present in the early church. I've read all the documents of the ordination of women in the early church and also the edicts phasing them out. How did that happen?
Why is it making you sad? Because surely there's potential
there. The sadness was that they got away with it for so long. The joy is that there's a crack in the whole thing now. And to be quite honest with you, as retired clergy, we're having to relearn a new way of being priests, and we want to do that. When we worked, there was a particular way of being a parish priest. We tried to be as inventive, as creative as we could within the boundaries of what both the Anglican Church and certainly the Roman Church expects. But that is broken. We need to find new ways. During my lifetime, I put forward 10 men and women for priesthood. There's one still training currently, a man, the last person I put forward. Hopefully, they will be able to help us recreate new ways of being priests. And when that happens, the nuns will have their proper place in society. And men and women at any level of life, no matter what their job is, no matter what their vocation is, they will at long last find their rightful place within the Church of God.
Fascinating, Reverend Anne Marie. And Reverend Isabel, you watched the two programmes as well.
Yes, I did.
What were your thoughts on them?
Well, my first reaction was that I was curious. I was interested in the historicity of the whole programme, which I thought was very well covered. And then I found myself becoming emotional to some degree. I guess seeing old footage of the seminaries being filled with young men willing to be part of this, part of the church that I, as a young girl, would have looked upon as quite sacred. And then I began to find myself being defensive when I listened to the interviews of the religious sisters and this business of their, I felt, having imposed on them the collective guilt of the past history of their orders. And some of these women living today would not have been involved in the actual the abuses that happened within their convent setting.
Their rules were directed by men.
But then other parts of the programme on the priests, I found the interviews very, very interesting, particularly the army chaplain who did wonderful work out in Africa when he described the teamwork necessary for their buddies to protect themselves in war, in situations of conflict, and to depend on the people holding your back, whom you couldn't see but you had to depend on. And he said the element of trust had to be very strong, and then the devastation when this trust was broken. So I felt that his words could have been describing the trust of the people in the clergy and the religious in the past, and then having these failures, very big failures on part of the clergy and the religious. But then I felt that the overarching thing needed was to accept the frailty of our humanity. All of us are flawed human beings. So yes, sometimes we'll get it right and sometimes we fail miserably. So history shows up sometimes very starkly our failures.
Reverend Isabel, you and Reverend Anne-Marie, you have lived through these phases. That's why looking at the history of it is very meaningful for you. You've both been sisters with the Catholic Church, and then you changed to the Anglican Church and you're priests now. But you've lived through it all. So it has a big impact on you watching it, as you're saying. What are you really feeling around sisters and nuns today?
I felt sorry watching their expressions and the words they used, that they had felt for the people who had suffered at the hands of their congregations or the people working for them. So they empathized with the sufferings of the people who suffered through their congregation. So that in itself is a very good thing. But I didn't feel right that they should have to inherit the angst of the people of the past. I feel that the remaining congregations need to either close down and die gracefully, or to enable a new form of life to come through what they started, you know, one or two centuries ago in Ireland in great need.
You think that guilt or that negative feeling, they need to let it go?
Yes, yeah. I know it's a very hard thing. None of us can leave deep feelings letting go easily. It doesn't happen easily. It takes time. But I guess I just was aware of it in the faces of those who spoke about their anguish.
They were very upset, yes. Distraught,
yes.
Still yes. Over it, yes. As they're being interviewed about it.
Yeah. For quite some years, I was responsible for delivering retreats, leading retreats with nuns. Their way of life was the result of clericalism. If that had not existed for so long, and of course we know that has been improved in recent years to a certain extent, but because the male concept of priesthood has retained more or less the elements from when clericalism dominated, that still impinges on those women who offer themselves to the living God. On top of that is the fact that actually if you're a woman in today's world, there are far more interesting things you can do with your life. As I think the program referred to, in the past, there wasn't much that any woman could do to educate herself or to be involved in any way, even on the peripheries, as really they were with what went on in the church.
If you look at Irish women, Irish men today, very highly educated, so they were living in a different time. They all saw the priesthood or the religious life as a possible way of bettering their lives. So today, where's our hope today?
Ireland is such a tiny little place compared with very large nations with very reactionary and traditionally, or it's called traditional, but it's not, it's old-fashioned ideas about what priests should do and nuns should do or the laity should do.
All of the Roman Catholic Church directed by Pope Francis, synodality is the big thing, which is looking at moving away from clericalism and is talking about listening and hearing and seeing how things can change and improve.
Which is extremely positive and important. The trouble is that it's very hard dragon anchor up from the deep, and it carries with it the mud that it was involved in. And that's where we're all at. Okay, I've always been someone, as a theologian, with one foot in the past, the best of the past, and one foot always in the future. The past really does need to crack for the light to come in. So how do we go into the future? Really important to study is the need for prayer, but also to listen unafraid. There will be little prophets amongst the people of God, and that could be the laity, and that could be the clergy. There were some terrific clergy. There were some terrific male priests. Wonderful women priests too.
Isabel, any final words for you?
Yes, as you ask me that, Mary, I have the image of the young, I think a French priest who now living in Ireland, belonging to one of the religious orders. And he said that Ireland needed missionaries to come and help them out of the trough they've descended in. And that got my goat up. We have what we need here in Ireland, whether we're Anglican or Roman Catholic, that we have to get back to the beauty and the strength and the insight that is there waiting for us to clear the debris from the eyes of our inner souls. So I believe Ireland has been dormant, apparently dormant. There are lots of life-giving, enhancing abilities within the communities, within the people of Ireland, that has yet to be brought into new life.
And don't expect change to be easy. Without the pain, there's no gain. So this crack in the way in which priesthood is exercised, crack in the way in which religious vowed life for men and women is going to have to change, that will be painful. The people of God will find it painful as they're trying to articulate their calling, their equal, profound vocation to represent the Church of God and be church. Church buildings are not churches. It's people who are churches.
Reverend Anne-Marie and Reverend Isabel, thank you very much for chatting to us this morning. We had great participation in our online mission, so thank you very much for participating. If you missed any of the nights or events connected with it, go to our website. There are links there. Go to our YouTube channel, All Diocese of Kerry. All easy to find. Just Google dioceseofkerry.ie or look for Diocese of Kerry on YouTube. Ailish O'Connor sang Rise Up during the mission.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find the fighter, but I see it in you. So we're gonna walk it out and move mountains. We're gonna walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day, and I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. Times again, and I'll rise up high like the waves, and I'll rise up in spite of the ache. I'll rise up and I'll do it a thousand times again. For you. Isn't quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe, and I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet and move mountains, bring it to its feet and move mountains.
Adie Roach was our guest last Sunday night on Hope Alive, the Mission Online. She is a woman of action. Let's hear more from her.
Love is all, because there is so much hatred, there is so much pain, there is so much violence in our world today. We don't have to look too far away for that, but I'm just thinking of the suffering in Gaza at the moment, of Ukraine, of what's happening in Sudan and the Horn of Africa. We have to dig deep, I suppose, within ourselves and to find the courage once more. Like our generation, you know, we really do believe that the future belongs to those who give the next generation reasons for hope. And that comes from the great Jesuit anthropologist, Father Teilhard de Chardin. I go back to those kind of sayings and to Victor Hugo's philosophies to try and draw on that even in my own most despairing of moments when I feel, my God, what's become of us all? I can go back to what the fundamental beliefs are, because they haven't changed. You know, what was the message of the Christ child being born? Born of refugee parents, indeed, who needed sanctuary. He brought us that message of messages, love, peace on earth, and of course, fundamentally, to have hope.
Absolutely. Have you ever hit rock bottom, Adie, and thought, oh, I can do no more?
Mary, I would be absolutely telling you a lie if I was to say there weren't times when I kind of would say to myself, you know, that enough is enough. I've done my bit. What carries me along is when we see the power of the impact of intervention. I see, I'm not one person standing alone on this, and this is what's so important. Because, okay, I might be the voice stepping out there, but behind me is an absolute army of volunteers. You know, when I think of Kerry, one of the first counties to respond to Chernobyl in 1986, right into the 90s and the 2000s and beyond, all of those children, 25,000 plus, they sought refuge, sanctuary as strangers in our midst. They found sanctuary in Kerry. All over Kerry, trucks of aid have been going out for the last, like, almost 40 years to Chernobyl. And right now they're going out. My friends in Trudy, George and Mary Sugu, are packing a truck that will be going out to Ukraine. Kerry has risen to this challenge. And in a sense, we are family together, responding together. When I say, you know, enough is enough, or where are we going to get the money from? Because our Christmas appeal, unfortunately, because of Gaza, everybody was giving generously, thank God, to Gaza. But it meant then it impacted on charities like ourselves, and our income dropped by 90%. What was so powerful was I did a small little piece on RTE television the week before Christmas saying what was happening. We had a team of cardiac surgeons at that very minute in time who were performing life-saving surgeries on babies in Ukraine. Did you? Well, Mary, those babies couldn't have lived, but they would have died with their Chernobyl heart condition without our intervention. And would you believe it gave a beautiful bounce to the fund, and now we're able to get the next mission going in February. When you see the face of a child, these innocent children, we're the only hope that they have. In the giving we received, you get more back than you'll ever give. And that is where the blessing is in the lives of these children saved. What is the purpose in being born if it isn't to reach out and to say, you are my brother, my sister, my son, my daughter, my neighbour, my friend. And yes, I am my brother and my sister's keeper, because otherwise there is no point. There is no purpose. You know, while we might be poor in the old bank account, we are rich in one another. That is where our community lies.
So, Adie, are you losing energy at this stage of your life? We all get a little bit more tired as we get old. I certainly do.
What I used to be running and racing around doing, we'll say 40 or 50 years ago, in all of the work over the years, it takes me much longer now. But you know what? It also puts a bounce in my step. And just knowing we're a very small island, but we've got a huge heart. We've got a wealth of history to draw on from our ancestors that went before us, and we are walking in their footsteps. All of the goodness, all of the great things that they did, all of the people that helped us in our hour of need in the great Irish famine, the people that sent us shipments of grain and corn. And I think deep within the psyche of the Irish people is that race memory of how we survived because of that direct hand of intervention. And now it is our turn to do it in reverse.
Thank you very much, Aidy Roach. After the break, I head for Artfert Primary School.